The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
David Grimm, editor of Science's online daily news site, Science Now, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news, including a story about spiky penises. Dave, to what do these spiky penises belong?
Well, Rob, these spiky penises belong to insects. Beetles, flies, and other insects have very unusual genitalia. And we're talking about the males here. They have penises that have bizarre combinations of hooks, spines, knobs, and yes, spikes. And you can see a really cool picture of these spikes on the site. And researchers have wondered for a long time, what is the purpose of these unusual genitalia?
And what is the purpose of these unusual genitalia?
Well, you know, believe it or not, Charles Darwin even had a theory about these genitalia. He thought that they were involved in something called pre-insemination sexual selection. And basically, this is all the things a male does to get the female to mate with him in the first place. So you can think about like peacock feathers. Males have these bright and colorful plumage. And the theory goes that females look at that and they go, wow, that male must be really hot stuff. I want to mate with him. And Charles Darwin thought something similar might be going on with these spiky penises, either that they, maybe not so much that they impress the female, but that there was something about them that allowed a male to outcompete other males to get to a female in the first place, mate with that female, and therefore sire the next generation of insects.
So what did these researchers do to test this hypothesis?
Well, it's a little cringe-inducing, but what the researchers did was they modified a laser beam so that it could shear off these spikes. Now, the flies were anesthetized before this was done.
No harm was caused to
any
fly.
No harm was caused to the fly. They just had a bit of penis laser surgery done, and the surgery removed most of the spikes, and then they put the males in vials with other males that had spikes and with females. And what they found is that when the shorn males tried to mate with the females, they kept on sliding off the female, whereas the males with the spikes didn't have very much problem with mating at all. And what this says to the researchers is that Charles Darwin was right. There's something about these spikes that helps sort of copulation happen in the first place. There were some other theories since Darwin's time that had suggested, well, maybe Darwin is wrong. Maybe these spikes are really for what's called post-insemination sexual selection. So in other words, the males can mate with any female they want, but the males with the maybe the more spiky penises are able to dislodge some of the other male sperm from female flies, because female flies tend to mate with a lot of males at the same time. But what the study shows is that Darwin seems to have actually been right. The spikes are actually important for mating in the first place, not for what happens after mating. They're really helping the males stay attached so that they can inject their sperm and potentially pass on their genes to the next generation.
Will these researchers be applying their lasers to cut the penises of other species?
It's highly possible. Beetles, as we mentioned earlier, also have very unusual genitalia. And beetles are some of those insects that people that were arguing against Charles Darwin's theory had been using. They've been saying, well, it seems like with beetles, you know, they're using these spikes to, you know, clear other sperm away. But these studies weren't able to utilize this laser technology. And now that it's available, researchers might actually be able to test this theory on other insects. So stay tuned.
Okay. So what other stories have you brought with you this week?
Well, Rob, sticking with the theme of insect mating, this next story is about mosquitoes and how mosquitoes find each other in a crowd. Rob, to you and me, all mosquitoes probably look very similar, but even to mosquitoes, mosquitoes look alike, especially among a group of mosquitoes known as the Anopheles gambiae mosquitoes. And these are the mosquitoes that transmit the malaria parasite, which kills millions of people every year.
How many species are we talking about here, this group of mosquitoes?
This group contains six species, which all look identical, even under the microscope. So the way that researchers tell them apart is there's actually genetic differences between these species that keep them separate. But the researchers were wondering, well, you know, when these mosquitoes are looking for a mate, you know, they really only want to mate with mosquitoes in their same species. But how do they find their mate if everybody looks exactly the same?
because mating with a different species wouldn't produce any progeny.
Exactly. Or wouldn't produce progeny that were fertile. So the researchers suspected, you know, mosquitoes make that really annoying buzzing sound. Maybe they somehow are using their buzzing to find each other. And what they did was they took two different forms of one of these Anopheles gambiae species called the M form and the S form. Now, these guys are, again, they look identical, but they have genetic differences that separate them. But they tend to hang around in the same places, but they only mate with the same form. So M males mate with M females, and S females mate with S males. And what the researchers did was they knocked these guys out, and they stuck a short piece of wire to their backs with beeswax and attached them to these poles, and they allowed the mosquitoes to get within a few centimeters of each other, but they couldn't actually touch. And then they put a microphone really close to them. And when they put two mosquitoes of the same form together, here's what they heard.
Okay.
And what you might hear there, Rob, is that the two insects seem to be harmonizing with each other. The harmonics are matching up really nicely. But now listen to this sound file, and this is two different forms of mosquitoes being placed close together. And their harmonics aren't matching. Now, see if you can pick that up here.
Yeah, a little bit more wavering sounds. Doesn't sound like they're getting in sync.
And that's what the researchers think is going on. These mosquitoes get close to each other. They're ready for mating. They start harmonizing. If they are able to harmonize well together, then they go, okay, that guy must be the same, the form that I'm wanting, or that gal must be the form that I'm wanting, and they go ahead and mate. Whereas if the harmonics don't match, they go their separate ways. And this is what researchers think are keeping the Anopheles species separate.
So will researchers be able to use this knowledge, perhaps playing mosquito sounds, to confuse them so that they mate and produce fewer fertile progeny and so cut down on malaria?
Well, at least one outside expert doesn't think that's going to be the real application here. Rather, researchers are just excited because, you know, there's so many ways speciation can occur. First of all, you know, species have to diverge in the first place to become different species, and then they have to have mechanisms in place that keep them separate species. And this could explain both things. It could, you know, if somewhere along the line, M and S started harmonizing differently, that could have caused them to diverge. And because they kept harmonizing differently, that's what keeps them separate, which is really cool because, again, these guys really live, they all live in the same place. They have the same daily habits. They're all sort of hanging around each other. But when it comes to mating, they're really keeping to themselves. And this helps explain how that's happening.
Okay. So last story, what's this last one about?
Well, Rob, from buzzing mosquitoes to fluffy planets, this last story is about some unusual worlds that have been discovered recently and what they mean for finding Earth-like planets beyond our solar system.
What makes them fluffy first?
Well, Rob, these planets are really big. They're about 40% larger than Jupiter, but they're a lot less dense than Jupiter. And Jupiter already is not a very dense planet. It's a gas giant. Whereas these planets are also made of gas, but imagine something that's much bigger than Jupiter and even less dense. And scientists call it fluffy because it really would look very ethereal to you or I.
What keeps them from collapsing under their own mass?
Well, Rob, astronomers think that Jupiter was originally also a very fluffy planet, but that over time it cooled down, or its core especially cooled down, and that caused it to become more condensed, more dense, and less fluffy. But these worlds don't seem to have undergone that process, and there's a couple possible explanations. First of all, these worlds are very close to their parent suns, and that heat from the sun could be keeping these guys very hot. Second of all, these worlds could have very strong tidal forces, which tend to churn up the interior of the planet and would also keep them fluffy. They don't know exactly what's going on yet, but those are two possible explanations.
So where were these planets found, and what implications do they have then for the formation of our solar system or other Earth-like planets?
Well, Rob, these planets were found by a spacecraft known as the Kepler spacecraft, which is operated by NASA, and it orbits our sun, and its whole mission is to find these quote-unquote extrasolar planets, planets beyond our solar system. And how it does this is it looks at, scans about 150,000 distant suns, and it looks for occasional dimming of these suns, which would happen if a planet passed in front of it. And when this happens, researchers, you know, log the data and then they try to confirm it with these ground-based telescopes on Earth, which can give them information about density and other characteristics, which is why we know how dense these planets are. So this week, scientists announced these five new exoplanets. Four of them are these fluffy planets. One is actually so fluffy, it's actually so not dense. Researchers say it basically has the consistency of styrofoam. So imagine a planet that's no denser than styrofoam. But actually, one of the planets was actually not a big fluffy gas giant. It was actually much like our Neptune. It appears to be an ice giant, much smaller than these other planets. Still not quite an Earth-like world, because you're talking about a very, very cold world that probably wouldn't sustain life. But what's really cool about finding this ice giant is, because it's such a relatively small world, even though it's still much bigger than Earth, these smaller worlds tend to be more Earth-like. These gas giants are not in any way remotely Earth-like. So the closer we get to detecting these smaller worlds, these more dense worlds, the closer we may be coming to finding a world that's more like ours.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave. And Happy New Year to you, by the way.
Happy New Year to you too, Rob.
So what other stories are you covering on Science Now or on the policy blog, Science Insider?
Well, Rob, for Science Now, we're looking into stories about the first four-legged creatures ever to roam the Earth, and also a controversial story about chronic fatigue syndrome and whether or not it's caused by a virus. And on Science Insider, Science's policy blog, we've got a story about NASA's science budget and also a story about the policy implications of planes and boats contributing to greenhouse gas emissions. So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the editor of Science Now, the online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science news, plus find a link to the science policy blog, Science Insider, at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.